Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Picture it, Los Angeles, 2024.
Welcome to Out on the Lanai. Out on the Lanai. The only Golden Girls podcast you're ever going to need to listen to. I am Sadie Pine / H. Allen Scotty.
Oh, I like that one. I'm Carrie Doherty. Today we're doing another Beyond Golden Girls episode where we cover the many film and TV projects that the women did outside of the Golden Girls during the course of their illustrious careers.
Award-winning careers.
Fabulous careers. Today we are breaking down the 1974 film production of MAME, starring a terribly miscast Lucille Ball and Bea Arthur, whose wig is giving such an Isabella Rossellini vibe.
No, it's giving Isabella Rossellini as performed by a drag queen vibe, because every single line uttered, that's such a good word, uttered in this movie from Bea Arthur is something a drag queen would say and or do. It is the most draggiest of performances I think I've ever seen on film, even from drag queens.
Before you even said that to me earlier when you texted me, I had a note about a very specific moment that felt like a very specific drag queen to me. So I'm very excited to see if we had similar thoughts about that. But before we get into all of it, a little bit of housekeeping. Today in the GGVIP Club, you're getting another Rusty Anchor Happy Hour where we're watching and talking about a really, really sweet video that we found. So shortly after Rue McClanahan's death, Betty White went through her apartment and some of her wardrobe and her Golden Girl scripts before everything went up for auction. And it's really sweet. And she tells a really nice behind the scenes story about a game they used to play when they did scenes together. Mm-hmm. And you can just tell these women were the best of friends. So we hope you enjoy that. You, of course, can join the GGVIP Club at patreon.com/Golden Girls Podcast. It's free to create an account, but you get most of the bonus content at the $5 and $8 a month tiers. And I know you have some housekeeping too.
Well, also, we didn't talk about this, but don't we have a watch along coming up soon too, don't we?
We do.
Yes, that comes out. So this is coming out the 20th. Today's the 20th. What day is this coming out? Next week.
Our watch along already happened.
Oh, wow. Guys, see, we're recording into the future because Carrie's going out of town. So I hope you join for the watch along.
We forgot to plug the watch along in our last episode.
No, we didn't. We didn't. We forgot. We plugged it on social media before it happened. And y'all are following us on social media at all of the accounts. So you were there. You were there. And I hope we had a great time, didn't we, Carrie? We had a wonderful time.
Oh, goodness gracious. What is happening?
It was so much.
All right.
Lots of dates happening. Well, okay. Yeah. Something to plug then too. I have something to plug too. I'm so glad that entered my brain, even though we did forgot about it in the last one, whatever. So we're on the YouTubers now. We're YouTubers. Carrie, we're YouTubers. How do you feel?
Well, I used to be one and then I sold my channel. So to me, this is it. Yeah, I sold my channel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Look at you.
I know. I sold it and they bought it. Yes. I was never a notable YouTuber, but I was a YouTuber.
Well, I'm not a notable really anything on any platform, but I do have dreams of being a notable something on a platform, and that's why we're on YouTube. No, it isn't. But YouTube, now, guys, you can watch the full episodes of Out on the Lanai on YouTube 5 days after they premiere on Patreon. So basically, every Monday, it will be... Now, everyone who's on Patreon, you can watch the YouTube video, the full episode, you know, the day it comes out. But on Mondays, we're dropping the episodes on YouTube. So it's going to be fun because you'll be able to see... And this is a great episode to watch on YouTube for the first time because we're showing a lot of clips. So there'll be a lot of clips from MAME in this episode and also just from Bea Arthur and stuff. So, like, it's a fun visual one to be watching. This would be a great first episode for you to go to YouTube and watch. You can also always listen to the podcast in every way that you've listened to the podcast before. But if you would like, and if you want to do it right now, you can go to our Patreon and watch it immediately, or you can watch it on the Mondays afterwards.
And what is our YouTube channel?
It's just Out on the Lanai. Just go to youtube.com/Out on the Lanai. Subscribe to the channel because that's important. I'm learning all the language.
And you click, know, that click that bell. Get those click notifications when a new episode drops. We should also mention, again, these are the episodes that are going up on YouTube for everyone. These are just the main feed episodes. So yes, any bonus content, Rusty Anchor Happy Hours, bonus interviews with GG cast crew members, those are still all exclusive in the GG VIP club.
Yeah, this is just the full episode that everyone gets. But you, this will be a great one to watch on YouTube. Now, I should say, because this is a musical and we all know how music works in this world, we can't show any clips from the music stuff. And then we have to, you know, we have to be very conscious of the music in the situation. So, but we are showing a lot of fun clips. So it'll be a good one to watch. I would suggest everyone to go over to YouTube. And also, you can just see us. Look how cute we are. My hair looks great today. God, I look so cute, don't I?
You look really good. You look, your hair does look really good. You've got like a nice like ocean spray wave going on.
You know what my trick is?
What's that?
I haven't showered today. I haven't showered.
Ah.
Yeah. I've been, you know, busy. I didn't shower. I didn't, well, I take that back. I did shower, but I didn't wash my hair. I just sort of let my hair have a thing.
You know what? You know what we say to little Oreo when she had like, when she, like after she's been playing at the playground all day and she's got that like stinky kid smell to her. So I'm going to start saying this to you, which is stinky baby, smelly baby. Playground baby. So what you are is you are stinky, smelly playground baby right now.
But I'm not stinky. I do have a friend who he has stopped washing his hair for like a month. He conditions it and stuff, but he has stopped washing his hair. And I actually think that's bad.
I can do you one better. My last boyfriend before I met Stan would go like 6 months without, he would just water because he didn't like the way that, and it got, and he had been doing it for so long that his hair wasn't as gross as you would think it would be because like his hair, like the natural oils were just like, oh, we're set. We don't really need to be like doing a lot of that stuff. But I used to make him wash it because I'd be like, this is crazy.
Gross. It must smell too, right?
Not as bad as you'd think it would.
I mean, I can see going a week without washing your hair.
Sure,
I cannot do that.
You don't
personally
want to dry it out. Like,
no,
yeah.
I go, what's your period? I mean, this is so off topic. And
I
brought
know,
it
we
up
have
and I
so
got us
much
on this.
MAME to talk about. I probably wash my hair every like, it depends on if I have to like be somewhere because my hair can get dry if I wash it too much. But if I'm like doing things publicly, like you can tell, like if you're looking at the video right now, well, my hair is a little bit dirtier, I'll just wear it in a ponytail. Maybe do a little dry shampoo on the roots, but...
Oh, I do. Whenever I'm not washing my hair, I always do a dry shampoo.
Yeah.
Always.
I would say maybe 3 days, but I could go... I'll still shower but without washing my hair, but I could go up to like maybe 5 days without, but usually about every 3 days I wash my hair.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm in the 2-3 day range usually. And this, because of the weather now, I've been like getting dandruff. Like I've never had dandruff before and now I have dandruff.
You got that dry scalp.
Maybe it's just me getting older. I mean, it is weird being 29, you know. It's like you hit that age and it's just all
also everyone go to the YouTube so you can see if we look the age we sound if you've never seen us before. Okay. We have I need you because this is you. I had never here is my extent of knowledge of MAME. You talk about Angela Lansbury and Bea Arthur's relationship all the time. And I know this song, We Need a Little Christmas Now, because it's on my Christmas playlist that I play every year. That is the extent to which I have experienced MAME. So I need, you're going to give us all like, you're going to give us the rundown and then, and then we'll take a, and then I've got so many questions.
Well, we have two clips. We rarely play clips in the opening segment, but this opening segment is going to be a bit extended because we have to set up some things for this. So if you want a real deep dive into Bea Arthur's career and what led her to being in both the musical version of MAME in 1966, the Broadway version, and also the film version, you can definitely go and listen to our deep dive into the life of Bea Arthur. We did a two-part episode. That would be great to listen to before this if you haven't listened to that. But just in brief, so MAME is based on the MAME musical, the 1974 musical is based on the 1966 Broadway musical of the same name. Now, that musical, which starred Angela Lansbury and Bea Arthur and was directed by Gene Sachs, was based on the 1958 Rosalind Russell film called Anti-MAME, which was a big hit and everyone loved it. And that was adapted from, I think it was also a play too, but that was adapted from a 1955 novel called Anti-MAME. And in general, it's about the nephew of, you know, this boy who's just sort of orphaned and he has to go live with his only family member that's left, Anti-MAME. And she's this colorful, over the top, sort of like really delightful woman to be, have as an aunt, and sort of eccentric in a lot of ways. And that's the basic genesis of the story. And it's about their relationship over the years. I think it's like a 30-year time frame that it goes.
Oh, and now, the time does jump.
The time does jump. Well, it doesn't in the 1974 film version, it does jump. It's a little bit more natural in the other versions, but it does jump for sure in the 1974 musical version. But so Gene Sachs is, as some of you might know, was Bea Arthur's husband at the time. And when he directed the Broadway version and also the film version. Now, he wasn't originally supposed to direct the film version. George Cukor, who is a famous, he famously is one of the co-directors uncredited for Wizard of Oz. Like, George Cukor is an iconic director in Hollywood. And he was scheduled to direct it, but then Lucille Ball, who was cast, got hurt in a skiing accident and they had to delay the production for a year, and so George couldn't do it, so that's when Gene stepped in.
Was it the giant avalanche that we saw on camera in the movie?
Perhaps
was that the skiing accident?
It wasn't that at all. So Warner Brothers, which produced this film and got the rights to adapt it from the Broadway musical, they did not want Angela Lansbury. Now, Angela Lansbury, it's interesting, this sort of, and we're mainly focusing on Bea Arthur's involvement, obviously, in MAME, this musical, in this movie. But it is interesting because Bea Arthur was so intimately connected to Angela Lansbury. Angela Lansbury was already a name before she starred in MAME on Broadway, but her career was sort of in a turning point. She had famously got nominated for her first film for an Oscar for her very first movie. She was a brand new actress. She had never really done anything before. She'd never really done a lot of theater before she did MAME. She did one play that bombed, failed. And so she really wasn't a big film star. She was known for supporting characters. She was known for playing evil characters, famously in The Manchurian Candidate. Like, she wasn't really a household name, but she was recognizable. And she couldn't really sell a musical. And so they were surprised at how big of a hit MAME was. And it was a huge hit on Broadway, but they still worried that she wouldn't be able, that wouldn't translate into film. And so they didn't want her to be in the film version of it, which got to then Lucille Ball. Lucille Ball was at a point in her career where she was like, she had done the Lucy show in the 60s and like Here's Lucy. And I think that was also happening in the 70s at the same time. And so she was sort of in her retirement period, but also still making stuff. She was still in movies and stuff. I mean, Lucille Ball had a very strong film career. Obviously, she was always known for television, but she had a really successful film career with a lot of films like The Long, Long, Long Trailer and like, you know, the film she did with Peter Fonda and like or not Peter Fonda, the dad, whatever that film was. Like, she did a lot of movies that were hits, you know, with Bob Hope, she did a lot of movies. And so people didn't really think that this would be as big of a failure as it was. But when it came out, Roger Ebert called it a total bust, devoid of joy, wit, good music, or decent dancing. And it was such a failure.
He wasn't wrong.
And no, it's a bad movie. It's a hard movie to watch. It's a really, literally, fast forward to just the Bea Arthur moments, and you'll only have 10 minutes of a film, but it's enjoyable because Bea Arthur's moments are, to me, some of the best moments in the film. But It was such a disappointment. And even though both Bea Arthur and Lucille Ball got nominated for Golden Globes for their work in the film, it was famously the last movie that Lucille Ball, major motion picture that Lucille Ball ever did. She was so embarrassed by it. And Bea Arthur also never really did a major movie after this. She more went into television, obviously, and she did TV movies and stuff, but she never really did a major movie after this. And so this was really a sort of a turning point in their careers. And Bea Arthur didn't even want to do it. Now, we played some of these clips in the Life of Bea Arthur episode that we did, but I wanted to, they're very specific to Mame. I wanted to play both of these. So this is Bea describing Vera, her character in the film.
Well, she was, first of all, she was very self-centered and a drunk and almost a cartoon. She's a famous actress, a theater actress who...
So, yes, yeah, so she's describing her character there, and she also has a situation where she was so struggling to, like, you know, should she do this movie? She obviously has allegiance to Angela Lansbury. She didn't think Lucille Ball was the right person to be doing this. I also get the impression that she wasn't necessarily in the best of relationship with her husband, because this was just a few years before they divorced.
Well, the way that she talks about it.
So let's listen to her talk about both her getting cast in the film and also just her general reaction to this.
Which was a tremendous embarrassment. I'm so sorry I did it. But I was married at the time, and my husband said, as my wife, you owe it to me to play the part. Lucy had seen the show and wanted me to do it. But it was really a disaster. She should never have done it. I know a lot of people liked it, and I don't share my feeling at all, but I just think she was wrong for the part. You know, and having worked with Angela, it was very difficult.
How was it working with Lucille Ball, though?
Well, she was charming. She's lovely. She's wonderful. But I just didn't feel she was right for the part. You know, she was a clown. She was extraordinary in what she did, but she didn't play this patrician lady who, you know, with such a sense of fun. And I thought she was terribly miscast, but that's neither here nor there. And again, maybe I'm not being really objective.
So yeah, she did not, she was not happy about this movie at all.
No, but also, like, yeah, I, you know, I know we're going to get into it, but as I was watching this movie, I was like, was Lucille Ball known as a singer? She was not,
well,
right?
Yes, she was. So
no.
She was known as a film musical singer. So Lucille Ball, before I Love Lucy, was in a series of films, musicals included then. And she wasn't known for having, like, an amazing voice, but she also wasn't known. She played up on the I Love Lucy show that she couldn't sing. Obviously, we know those episodes. Right. But everyone who had known her career before that knew that she had a pretty lovely voice. I mean, it was a very sort of, like, standard musical. It wasn't like she was Judy Garland, but she had a good voice. She even sang, I think, in the long, long trailer, like, to prove that she could sing. So she
well,
could
not
sing,
by this but, movie.
Well, but at this point in her career, and this is the interesting thing about Lucille Ball, her voice had been so wrapped up in smoking for the past 30, 40 years of her life that you could tell she could not sing the way she sang in the 40s and 50s. She just could not. And it was very apparent in, but then again, I think Gene Sachs, who obviously directed the film, heard Bea Arthur's voice. And Bea Arthur famously has a really unique singing voice. It's deep, it's baritone, it's like there's a huskiness to it. And I think his thinking, and this is just me inferring, I'm not going off any, you know, record on this of him saying this, but I think they probably thought that their voices matched. And even in the film, there are moments where they have those little things saying like, oh, well, we both could sing this or we could do this or whatever. So like, I think they thought that because they had similar, quote unquote, singing voices, that it would work. But you need that sort of voice that actually can't, like even Angela Lansbury, beautiful voice, but not like a major Broadway voice, but a beautiful voice nonetheless. Like it was a nice character. She was a character actress voice, but it was different from Bea Arthur because it could go higher and it had range and it was just a different type of voice. And you need that in this kind of, I think, musical. You need the juxtaposition of those two voices. And it just did not work with Lucille Ball. I mean,
it
Lucille Ball
not work.
Was a mess in this movie on a level that is difficult to watch. And you know what's interesting too, that, you know, Katharine Hepburn also went through this at the same time. There was a musical based on the life of Coco Chanel, I think, and Katharine Hepburn starred in it. And Katharine Hepburn didn't have a great voice. She had a really unique voice. And it was a similar situation where like she just got dragged for having this like really bad voice that just no one really wants to listen to. And Lucille Ball, I think, had the same experience with this film.
Yeah. And I think like, and we're still seeing this happen today where, you know, like, what's her face? Emma Watson being cast as Belle in Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. She had like a good singing voice, but they auto-tune the shit out of her because
it's not like we're used to something
but
insane.
But like hire Adele Dazeem. You know what I mean? Like we need musical theater people to be doing that. We mm-hmm. need singers to be singing or just get some, you know, The Lion King was Jonathan Taylor Thomas speaking voice, Jason Weaver singing voice. They would do that all the time. They did it with Aladdin. Like you can have someone doing the speaking and then somebody else doing mm-hmm. the singing voice. Mm-hmm. I don't know why this did not happen in this motion picture. I also didn't think it was totally the fault of Lucille Ball in so much as the time jumps in this movie were so wild to me that mm-hmm. I didn't even have time to like get invested in certain characters and their stories because I was like, wait a second. And all of a sudden we're just 4 years ahead of time.
Well, but also on top of that, I mean, with the time jumps, of course, as well, but I love the Rosalind Russell film and I love the Broadway version of it too. I love both of them. I think they're just staples of just my love of, you know, musicals. But the relationship between the aunt and the nephew was such a focus of both of those projects. And this felt like the nephew almost was barely in it half the time. Like there were so many moments of just Lucille Ball going out and doing things that it just felt like, it felt like they wanted to make this a Lucille Ball musical vehicle mm-hmm. and not MAME in a way.
So maybe you can answer this question because I wrote in my notes, I am 1 hour and 17 into this 1 hour and 17 minutes into this movie and there's no conflict.
Yeah,
there was no conflict in this movie.
No.
So I'm like, oh, okay, this is fun. This is going to be like Big Daddy or the Mick, where mm-hmm. somebody who's like totally ill-equipped to have a child is going to be forced to have a child, and it's going to like mm-hmm. turn their world upside down, and they're going to grow from it. But there was no conflict. So like, he mm-hmm. just showed up, and she's able to take care of him just fine. And then she loses her house and all of her money. And I was like, oh, well, that's going to be tough, because now she has this kid. But no, mm-hmm. she just moves to Georgia with the rich guy. And then the rich guy dies and you're like, oh, well, she's sad. Oh, but no, she seems to be just fine, I guess. There was just like, there was no conflict. And also half the movie took place in Georgia.
Yeah,
I didn't know that was going to happen. I was not prepared.
It's a wild experience. So when we break down the film, we're going to focus on some of the crazier moments, but we're going to focus a lot on Bea Arthur as well, because obviously that's
I needed more Bea Arthur in this movie.
And that's the other thing. There's not enough Bea Arthur.
No.
And
that was going to be my golden takeaway. I'm going to blow it right now. I needed more Bea Arthur.
Well, I mean, go with it. You know what I mean? Like, it's that works.
So
should we go ahead?
Before we do, real quick, though, in the book or musical or regular stage show of this, was there conflict? Like, has the story been so diluted by the time you hit this movie that it's like, no, Carrie, the book is actually really great?
Well, I've never read the book. I've seen the original film a lot. I love it so much. It is so fun. It is so fun. Rosalind Russell is just incredible. She also is the mom in Gypsy. She does the film with Natalie Wood as the daughter, and it is just such a good movie. Rosalind Russell, please give her some love in your film viewing. But in the original film, there definitely is conflict because she struggles. She does. There's a struggle there between her eccentric life. I mean, she never is not eccentric, but there's a struggle between how she's going to be able to do this and everyone giving her hell for, like, you know, living the life that she does with this kid who just should be, you know, normal and everything. So there is definitely conflict that happens in the original film. There's also the thing about the musical is when you watch a musical, yes, there's conflict in the musical, of course, but because of the nature of being in a theater with a music and dancing and singing, you almost don't need immediate conflict. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can, like, I'm thinking in Wicked, for example, like, you know, you have the whole first act where the conflict doesn't really come. I mean, there's some, but it doesn't really come until that moment when she really realizes she needs to be wicked. You know what I mean? Like, and so that's pretty standard for musicals. I mean, maybe Rent's a little bit different, but it's not uncommon for there not to be immediate conflict. But when you adapt it then into a film, everything moves faster. You know, we're not seeing these dances in real time, which takes up time, more time than a film allows, and just because of the nature of film. And so it feels then like, well, where is this going? What's happening? Why isn't anything happening here?
Yeah, nothing was happening.
Which is why, like, you know, adaptations of musicals like The Sound of Music, for example, are so fantastic, because they fix that. They fix it in the film version so that the conflict comes, so that you know where you're going. You know what's to come with some of this conflict. Funny Girl, great example of a film adaptation that is just amazing. And they fix that problem really, really quickly. So yeah, this didn't have a lot of that. I also feel like, too, a lot of it, and I don't want to put a lot on Lucille Ball's door, because I feel like it probably also was a Gene Sachs thing and also maybe a studio thing. But I feel like the differences between the Broadway musical and this, and there aren't really that many, but the differences are probably things that either Lucille Ball wouldn't do or didn't feel like she could do, and maybe just didn't want to do because it wasn't right for her brand or what people thought of her, and they had a very clear view of her. So, like, I feel like there's a lot of that, whereas with Angela Lansbury doing this, it's like Angela Lansbury is an actor. She's not worried about how people view her. She's worried about delivering the performance.
Right.
And so she would have done and sold it and did the job, you know? And so I kind of feel like that's also a problem with this, that they went in a celebrity direction casting. Mm-hmm. And instead of focusing on, like, oh, let's just get a real talent. It's the Patti LuPone of it all. You know what I mean? Patti LuPone originating these amazing roles on Broadway, like Evita, or, like, I mean, even in Gypsy, like when she did the version of Gypsy a couple years ago, like, it was incredible. But they never want to give her the film version. Like, they didn't want to ever cast her in the film because she doesn't look pretty, or she isn't a star. She's not a movie star, all these different things. And it's like, but she is the part. Yeah. She is Evita.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's the same thing with this. Angela Lansbury is Auntie Mame. She should have been in this movie. And how amazing would it have been? Because we never got to see it. We never got to see a filmed, I mean, yes, we saw on the Tonys when they sang Bosom Buddies, but we never got to see Angela Lansbury and Bea Arthur act together on film or in television. And it could have happened with this film version. But that's history for you. But at least we're talking about it now. So I say we take a break. Mm-hmm. We come back with a deep dives into some of the great moments of Bea Arthur in this movie.
And also just some of my questions that I don't think I'm going to be any less baffled when you answer them for me. And we are back. We are talking about Mame and
Mame.
Okay. So, all right. Oh boy. Okay. So,
okay, let's set up the premise, because we didn't do that in the original one. So the basic premise is Auntie Mame is this rich eccentric lady who has all these eccentric friends, some Broadway stars, some actors, some whatever, some musical people, some doctors, some all kinds of crazy
and
people.
And her employees, and Agnes and Ito, who, if this movie were made today, Agnes would 100% be played by Amy Sedaris.
Oh, fully, 1,000%. Her nephew, she has no other family, he has no other family, has to come live with her. And now all suddenly, while she has this fabulous party, she has to raise this child.
Like,
and it's basically about her.
He's like six, maybe seven.
Yeah.
His name is Patrick. Yeah. I also cried within the first, like, I cried in the first minute of this movie because I'm like, oh, an orphan. He's an orphan. His dad passed away. His daddy died. Where's his mom? I was crying, just so you know.
But she finds out she's going to raise this kid. And it's sort of all about that relationship and how she accomplishes it. It's all set right before the Great Depression. And I think it's the Great Depression. Yes. And she, during the Great Depression, loses all of her money. And we follow this kid as he kind of grows up, but we don't actually see him grow up at all. And then some of the struggles of her being raising a child as a young child, but then also being the pseudo parent.
No, there were no struggles. You say struggles. There were no struggles.
But there were struggles with her best friend.
Sure.
Vera,
yeah.
Played by Bea Arthur. Because the two of them, and I will say Lucille Ball and Bea Arthur on screen together is enjoyable. Mm-hmm. They were enjoyable acting together. It's not the same as Angela Lansbury and Bea Arthur, but it is a dynamic that is really actually fun to watch. And whenever they get a moment, there's a moment. I'm going to play this first clip, the first one where we meet Bea Arthur's character, Vera, and it's at a party. It's at the beginning of the film, and it's at a party that Mame is throwing at her house. And she's introducing her nephew to basically all of her little friends at this party, her best friends. And it is a moment. I'm going to play the clip. You can't really tell what's happening from the audio of the clip, but we'll explain it afterwards. It's kind of fun and iconic. Hold on.
Vera, darling. Patrick, this is Vera Charles, the first lady of the American theater, and your Auntie Mame's dearest friend. She just loves little boys.
Yes.
So, in this clip, Vera says yes. She's meeting this child. She's wearing a tight little bob, she's drinking. She's clearly drunk. She's very drunk. And Bea Arthur takes a full drink of whatever she's drinking, and then literally, she's standing on the edge of a step. She falls backwards over the steps, and men catch her and carry her up more steps.
Well, and you didn't even play that audio. You didn't even play all of it because it's literally just chatter. Like, I thought, oh, okay, this is a funny bit. They're carrying her. Maybe they're going to play some music. It was so, the shot is so long and awkward, and it's just like, the sound design was really jarring for me in that moment. Bea Arthur's performance, though, I loved. I thought she was so funny. And I said it in, I think, our last episode. I love to see Bea Arthur falling down. And Bea Arthur fell down on the Golden Girls a lot. They're like, she's a very tall woman, and it's funny when she falls. And this was no different. She was so funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was, and what's so interesting about it too is that she, like, you know, they didn't have a stunt double or something do this. Like, it literally was Bea Arthur doing this. Like, how great is
that?
Well,
and this is where, for like a big studio movie, there were some things that I like kind of, Bea Arthur falling, I wasn't like, I was like, she's professional. She can do a pratfall. I'm sure that's fine.
Yeah.
But like,
but over stairs?
Yeah, no, that's true.
Like, that's so scary. She was literally standing on, it was like on,
that's true,
it's like
actually
in Death Becomes Her when Meryl Streep was like, you know, like sort of balancing on that step. You know what I mean? Like, that's exactly.
Down the stairs.
And then Bruce Willis just puts his finger towards the thing and makes it and falls down the steps. Yeah, like, I mean, that's what it was. But she was doing it in real time. Like, actually, it was actually happening. It was
wild. Well, let me ask you, do you think, was she in more danger, or were the horses down in Georgia in danger when the shit they, I can't believe that Bea Arthur, knowing how much she loves PETA and horses and their urine not being used in Premarin.
Yeah.
The scenes with the horses down in Georgia, I was like, you cannot tell me a horse was not injured in the making. They were like jumping
over
cars.
Arthur was not on set that day.
These horses were jumping over like people. They were running. They were doing the, and then they had dogs like weaving in through the horses. Yeah. Like we're fucking watching Jurassic Park when the, oh God, I was like, these animals are in distress.
Two things. She divorced the man who directed that shortly after the making of
it's
this
probably
film.
Probably because of the horses.
And she was not involved at all in any of that part of the film. Thankfully, she stayed in New York City and did her thing. Wonderful.
I mean, Bea Arthur could have worked a day on this movie. If you told me Bea Arthur worked for 12 hours, I would have been like, sure, I believe you. She wasn't in it enough.
No, totally.
Why so early in this movie, Mame has just met her Patrick, her nephew. She talks to her friends about his libido. Why is she talking about his libido?
Because, I mean, that actually is kind of a part of the character in all versions of Mame, just because she is a weirdo who believes in sort of like new age stuff and parenting.
Is that why
like,
we saw a child's bare butt in this movie when we went to the school?
I know. That is weird. That was a weird moment. That was a weird moment. But I mean, that was a weird moment.
A child's bare bottom. Well, okay.
Let's not, but I do want to tell you, and I don't want to focus on the moments that don't involve Bea Arthur so much. I want to say that up front because nobody, and I want to do this for our listeners, no one is going to care about those moments. It is the Bea Arthur moments.
I know
that
that's what we care about, but you also have to understand.
So let's not spend too much time on the
non-Bea
Arthur
moments. Seeing this movie for the first time, and I have, fine, I don't want to talk about them sitting on the spikes of Lady Liberty's crown and how I was worried she was going to kill the child. Should we just play our next Bea Arthur moment?
For the sake of our listeners, I'm going to save them from going down the path that I know you want to go down. Yes. So later on in this moment that we see Bea Arthur again, and it's the next day, and she is having a hangover beyond a hangover. And we find her, and she has spent the night at Mame's house. I mean, it is such a silly Bea Arthur moment that I don't think I've ever seen something more slapsticky.
I loved it.
Than this moment with Bea Arthur. But they find her in the bathtub at Mame's house. And here's a little moment from that.
Oh my God. Someone's been sleeping in my dress.
Well, don't worry, Vera, darling. We'll get the wrinkles out.
And it's just Bea Arthur standing in a shower, taking a shower in her clothes.
The way
That's
she
all
didn't
it is.
Even flinch, her, the way she was standing was so perfect. Yeah, she was just so funny. She was so great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of those moments that I'm just sort of like, she knows. I mean, that's what's so great about watching her do this film is that she knows this part so well. She knows her role in the film and the story. She knows what she's supposed to deliver, and she just does it. She just does it in a way that is just like, it's just fun. It's just fun. I mean, she's my favorite. I mean, obviously, she's my favorite part of the movie, but I think arguably, even if you were watching this and you weren't a Golden Girls fan, you would be like, I need more of that lady.
Exactly.
Yeah, I need more of her. Like, and I think that's the general takeaway from this film for me. What stood out to you next?
So, well, what I liked about, I mean, I do want to talk about Bea Arthur. So her character, Vera, has a show. And when Mame loses all of her money, Vera's like,
yes,
you need a job. Like, I will give you one line in my show. She's like really putting her neck out.
One of my
friend.
Favorite lines comes from this scene.
So let's play that moment.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it up to you, I promise.
Vera, how could you possibly help me get Patrick back?
Mame, you're going to need money. So I'm going to get you a job in my new show.
Vera, I don't want charity. Besides, I found out years ago what you thought of my talent when we were in the chorus together.
I was never in the chorus.
It's such a drag queen conversation there's so many moments, and I pulled a few clips of those kind of moments throughout the film because their relationship is all about, what are you saying about me? What are you inferring? Mm-hmm. What are you suggesting? And it's just so much fun to watch.
It was so much fun to watch. Yeah, we should also mention Patrick was like taken away from Mame because she didn't like adhere to like the instructions in the will. But then she just like steals him back and like leaves the country with him and nobody gives a shit. And he's like probably like a kidnapped child. And then and then years later, she takes Patrick's child to Russia. And I'm just like, this woman steals children.
Well, you basically just told the plot of the film.
I know. Yes. I'm jumping around tonight.
A lot happens with
a lot happens with Patrick. So I did.
But from.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I know we're not playing any moments from it, but when they do the show and B sings like the man in the moon is a lady, I'm again so captivated watching B. Arthur in this.
She's such a great live performer. She's so great on a stage with dancers and singers. And she just, I think partly because of her height and her voice and everything, she just commands the attention on the stage. If anyone's going to steal attention away from Lucille Ball, it's going to be Bea Arthur on a stage. And even though I love the musical performance, so basically what happens is Vera gives Mame a part in her show to help her out because she's financially strapped and, you know, needs the work. And Lucille Ball screws up everything and basically makes Vera's life hell during this show. But my favorite moment from this whole show thing actually isn't actually on the stage at all. It's what happens when Vera's character walks off stage to her dressing room. She's appalled at what her friend did. She's so upset at how much of an embarrassment the performance was for the audience. And she does this thing that I find so enjoyable. Hold on. So it's just Bea Arthur. It literally, there's no dialogue even. It's just Bea Arthur walking into her dressing room and she slaps her dresser, who's helping her take off her costume. And then her dresser just slaps her right back. And then Vera, Bea Arthur's character, then just goes and hugs her dresser like they're the best of friends. And it's just, it kind of reminded me of like a Golden Girls fight, like when she hits Rose with the newspaper or something. And then she feels bad about it. And she's just like, I just feel bad for hitting you. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like something that would happen between her and Rose.
I love that for you, that was a Golden Girls moment, because when I watch this and then I watch the clip again, like, it's giving me Nathan Lane in The Birdcage. Like when Nathan, like when Albert just throws himself like on the, like the, what's it called? Like the little chaise lounge or whatever. It just, yeah, I felt so much of Nathan Lane in The Birdcage. And then like the pearls are like still in her mouth while she sobs. I thought it was so, so funny. And just, she doesn't say anything. That was like my favorite Vera moment in the movie. It was so funny.
The pearls in her mouth moment is actually, that stood out to me because it was just so like for any other star, you know what I mean? Lucille Ball or even a Barbara Streisand, like she would have done the take again so that the pearls wouldn't be in her mouth. But for Bea Arthur, and I'm crediting Bea Arthur for this moment, for this choice, even though I feel like maybe it was just they didn't want to do another take or they just didn't care. But Bea Arthur's like, well, I mean, but that's what would happen in that moment.
Yeah, it's an accident. Her pearls end up in her mouth because she's wearing like so many pearls, but it's very funny. Yeah.
It's very funny. It was very funny. I loved it. I loved that.
So Mame ends up getting a job at a shoe store. And I also call feet Tootsies. I don't know if that's anybody else does that, but I said it's a little Oreo. I don't call like my own feet Tootsies, but I'm like, oh, should we put some socks on these Tootsies? Are your Tootsies cold? So I didn't realize that other people did it. She meets a man named Beauregard, who's from Peckerwood, Georgia. And which is totally believable because like there's a town called like Effingham. Like they're just weird names of places in Georgia. But then when he said he lives on a plantation, she was like, oh. And I thought it was going to be like an ew, oh. But instead it was more like an oh. Mm. And I was like, no, Mame.
Well, it should be an ew, oh, for the record. But we also need to respect the part of history that this film was made in and the time frame and everything. And that was a period in which people maybe weren't being as aware as they should have been over the implications of plantations, et cetera. I mean, that sort of comeuppance that was long overdue only happened really in the last 20 years, which is so unfortunate to think about, yeah. That people were just having weddings and shit at plantations when it was just like, that should have always been uncomfortable. And it was uncomfortable for many, many people, particularly, you know, people of color. But still, it was always uncomfortable. But yeah, but I do want to respect sort of that, you know, I don't think they would have been as progressive.
No, and I know that. That was just my gut check reaction. Yeah. I think her O was like, oh, this man has money. And then she roller skates through a department store, which reminded me of, I don't know if you ever saw like the Pippi Longstocking movie from like the 80s.
Oh, my God. That movie changed me. The song Scrubbing that she sings. How does it go? Help me.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
No.
Pippi Longstocking,
the walking one.
Coming into your world.
Coming into your world,
redheaded,
yes.
Girl.
Oh my
I know.
God.
Well, do you remember Scrubbing Day where they put the scrubbers
yes.
and then they're
oh,
and
yes.
they're literally they're just roller skating around, but they're cleaning. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Mom, I would clean if I could clean like Pippi and her two and like Annabelle and Jonathan or whatever their names were. So yeah. Oh, and then Need a Little Christmas Now. Mm-hmm. I always wondered. I was like, wait, is MAME a Christmas movie? It's obviously not because they. No.
But I will say that it was not uncommon for musicals like Meet Me in St. Louis to have a Christmas number. They're not Christmas musicals or movies, but they do have Christmas elements to them. You know what I just recently noticed that I didn't notice
what?
This? I went to last night, speaking of not Christmas movies that aren't Christmas movies, because I love low key not Christmas movies. And the Need a Little Christmas is a big song, a Christmas song, I would argue. And the fact that it comes from this musical is interesting. But they're at the Academy Museum, they had a screening of Showgirls. And I didn't notice that throughout a lot of the film in Vegas, they never acknowledge it, I don't think. They never acknowledge that it's Christmas time. But like, there are Christmas trees at the hotels and stuff. And it's like Christmas decorated and stuff. And even on the desk when she's like, you know, she's getting the job at the show at the Vegas show place. And there's like a snowman on the desk and everything, but they never acknowledge that it's Christmas, but there's Christmas stuff everywhere. I could be wrong. Maybe they do acknowledge it and I'm just not aware of it or I missed that part, but I don't think so. They never acknowledge that it's Christmas.
I don't recall them acknowledging it. I wonder if it's because like, was there Christmas in like public places that they were shooting? So they're like, oh shit. Like,
yes.
So what it was is they were filming the movie around Christmas time and they just couldn't help that there was Christmas stuff everywhere because it's just when they were shooting. So they were like, well, maybe put like a snowman on the desk so it just feels like it's the Christmas season because maybe,
so
you know what I mean? Like,
to me, Christmas is the most distracting. If you have Christmas decorations around, I'm immediately paying attention
yeah,
to that and it becomes a Christmas
movie. That's so interesting.
Me, you know?
Oh, well, I'm going to watch Showgirls through a new lens now.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're, you know, they decided they're celebrating Christmas a month early because everybody's really depressed. She lost her job at the shoe store and this Beauregard dude is going back to Georgia, but it doesn't matter because he ends up like coming back and he's like, I wanted to see you, Mame. And then the rest of the movie pretty much takes place in Georgia. And like, I'm assuming time passed here because all of a sudden they're like, she's moving in with him.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, I know. It's strange. A lot happens. And like literally there's like an hour in the film where there's no, basically an hour where there's no B. Arthur. And I'm like, what happened? Like what is going on? I mean, there's a whole, and even in the musical that does happen, but it doesn't feel that way because of the way the Broadway musical is set up. Whereas this film is 2 hours and I think 11 minutes and it feels like 4 hours and in the middle of the film, you're like, wait, is the kid gone and her best friend's gone and we're meeting all these new people?
Right.
What is happening?
I know. All of a sudden we're meeting like Beauregard's family and this woman that is kind of like the Julia Roberts in My Best Friend's Wedding, who's like, I don't like that he's marrying Kimmy. Kimmy, you know, creme brulee is never going to be Jell-O. Mm-hmm. Also, Blanche Devereaux's worst nightmare would be Mame having a Yankee in Georgia. Like,
A Yankee.
Blanche. So Blanche did kind of remind me of like the his like Beauregard's like hometown girlfriend who was like, no, like I've been coming after this man for years. You can't just steal him from me.
Yeah.
But I did.
This whole part of the movie is when I have to admit, I didn't fast forward at all. I watched every single second because I take my job very seriously. However, I didn't take one note during this.
I wrote, where's Vera? I wrote, are they just going to keep singing? Oh, I wrote, the soft whisper song is creepy when they all sing. You make the cotton easy to pick. I didn't like that. But yeah. The giant fountain that her and Beauregard were dancing in front of, that's the Huntington Gardens in Pasadena, if anybody ever goes.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, little Oreo loves that fountain. And then, all of a sudden we time jump again and Patrick is grown up, even though Jesus Christ.
Let's take a break. We're going to skip a lot of adult Patrick, but let's take a break and we'll come right back when we're going to bring back Vera real quick.
Okay. In getting to Vera, I'm literally gonna like three bullet points because just so people understand the craziness of this. All of a sudden, Patrick has grown up. He's just grown up now. And then all of a sudden, we don't even have time to process that because Beauregard and Mame are skiing and they show this like avalanche, which is crazy. But somehow he died and she didn't die, and so now all of a sudden he's dead, and Patrick, the little boy, is grown up, and then
She's back in New York,
reunited with Vera.
And she's wealthy again. She's very wealthy
again. But no conflict. She lost all of her money, and then just married a guy, and then he died, and she had all of his money.
And she's sad because they were genuinely in love.
She's
sad.
So, but that sadness doesn't equal conflict. There's still no conflict in this movie.
No. And then this moment does get us to one of arguably, I think the most iconic moment in the movie. And it's where Lucille Ball and Bea Arthur sing Bosom Buddies. We'll always be bosom buddies. That's all I can sing. Legally, it's all we can sing. It's a great moment. And I have, like, even though I don't love Lucille Ball singing this song, it is really fun to see Bea Arthur sing this song because it is so, they both look amazing in their outfits. You know, Bea Arthur in this black fur number bit and the hat and the everything, and then Lucille Ball in this white outfit, and they're contrasted so beautifully, and it's just fun and campy and gay and just draggy, and it's just so much fun, didn't you think?
Yeah, I loved the way when they reunite. I don't think, do we have this as a clip or no?
We do. Yes. The post bosom. There's a wonderful bit. Again,
Buddy or after?
Right after. Literally, as soon as the song ends, this is the clip I pulled because I love this little line because it just shows that like they can't even say one nice thing to each other without there being something of a dig or an insult perceived or something. So let's play this little clip real quick.
You know, I think it's amazing how we've always remained such good friends, especially when you consider how often we dated the same men.
Mame, I never dated the same man you did.
How about Carlo, the sexy Argentine, the one with all those shoulders?
I never dated Carlo. I married him. I never dated him.
Which is, like, I mean, it's just funny to me that, like, you know, that she would, I mean... that she just married him basically probably for money.
Yeah, or to like spider friend.
Yeah.
I also love before they sing Bosom Buddies, when they reunite, Vera comes in and this is like they haven't seen each other in forever. And Vera's like, she sees her and she goes, "You look awful." And then Mame goes, "Vera, my old, old, old friend." And it reminds me of the way that Betty White and Joan Rivers are just tit for tat, just always like sort of insulting each other in like such a jokey way. It was so fun. And then Bosom Buddies was so good. And then Mame and Vera give Agnes a makeover. They like literally put her in a bubble bath. It reminds me of like Cher and Dion in Clueless giving Ty a makeover. Yes. And then all of a sudden,
but this is also so random. So,
but then all of a sudden, Agnes is 9 months pregnant in another time jump, and then she sings about it, and I'm like, what? What?
Yeah, what's... but this time jump, this time jump gets us to the end of the film. So Patrick is now a full-fledged adult, as we know, and he's about to get married to this horrible woman whose family is horrible and racist. And
they're real like Barbara Thorndykes.
They're very, I mean, there's, and I will say Mame's character hates them and wants to get back at them intentionally. And she uses her wealth in a fun way to get back at them. So the whole plot is like, she has to meet the parents of this girl that Patrick's going to marry. And this is where the conflict comes in, basically.
I still argue this isn't conflict.
But this is like some conflict, at least, where Mame doesn't like, you know, the girl that he's marrying and thinks that he shouldn't be marrying her. And she can't really express it to him. She tries to, but it doesn't really happen. And he's frustrated because he wants her to like this woman. And so we meet in and unfortunately, the last time we see Bea Arthur in this movie is at that final party. So they come, the girl and Patrick come to New York, and her parents come to New York, and it's this big party that Mame is going to throw for this, you know, the family of this new girl. And she also has a secret to reveal. But before she reveals that secret, she wants to invite all of her eccentric friends over to the party to show this ignorant, racist, horrible couple that Patrick's marrying into, this family that he's marrying into, how fun life can be with eccentric, wonderful, different, diverse friends. And that means Vera walks in singing. She comes in fully singing a full number to this party just as a introduction to her entering the party. I want to do that. I want to enter parties just singing.
What would you sing?
I think I could. Oh, I would sing anything. I can make anything into a song. Give me a topic. I'll go.
Okay. Well, what would be your entrance song?
Just give me anything. I'll go. I'll make a song out of it.
Wait, what is...
Taco party.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Oh, yes. So Snooki. Snooki always says, party's here. Party's here. So that. Do parties here.
So you want... Okay. Hey, everyone. Guess who's here? The party's here, and I'm here to stay. Look at me. I'm so fabulous. I'm going to be here all night, bitches.
Oh, okay. Wow, you opened your denim coat at the end. That was a real, like, top that. Yeah, that was, you were flexing.
I can do anything. Yeah, so I just did a Vera. Yep. So Bea Arthur comes in singing, and then there's a great exchange between Patrick's fiance and Vera, Bea Arthur's Vera, that I love so much. I'm going to play that.
Mame, darling.
Claude, that's the famous stage star. What's her name? I'd like you to meet my dearest friend, Vera Charles. Vera the Upsons.
Oh, Miss Charles. I've simply got to tell you how I adored you in reflected glory.
Did you, dear? That was Tallulah Bankhead.
Vera's only a baritone.
Oh.
Could you be persuaded to have a drink, dear?
Well, maybe just a tiny triple.
I love, one of my favorite directions that happens in this is Lucille Ball's character, Mame, obviously, when Bea Arthur says triple, she does this, she turns around real quick, puts her hands on her hip or something, and that's like, has three, just holds up her fingers for three. And it's just so like sassy and funny and silly that I love it so much.
I loved that moment. Patrick's fiance is also chewing so much scenery in that she is acting.
A young Bruce Davidson. So Bruce Davidson was Academy Award nominee for Longtime Companion in 1990, Best Supporting Actor. One of the first, if you are queer or an ally, it's one of the first films that really addressed HIV/AIDS in a really amazing way. Mary Louise Parker is in it, and she's incredible in it. And he was in that film, and it's a great film. He also was on The Sopranos a lot, which I really loved. Is he the dad in Home Alone? No.
But he's in much.
Wait, maybe I'm confusing the dad in Home Alone. Yeah, the dad in Home Alone was in Sopranos, and he looks like Bruce Davidson, but Bruce Davidson is not in The Sopranos. Sorry.
Is it Davidson? Or I think it's Davison. Bruce Davison?
Is it Davison?
Yes, Davison. Yes, you guys all know him. He's in a gajillion. He's in everything.
Yeah, he's, in a bunch of stuff.
He's in everything.
Yeah, but this is like one of his first things. So, you know, it's nice.
Oh, and he's
good.
From Philly. So I like a Philly guy.
And this is the last time we see B. So like basically how this ends is, so in this moment, what I do love is that after B. Arthur's Vera comes in and does her whole thing, basically Mame reveals that she has bought the property next to the parents. The parents are rich.
Down in Georgia.
And they didn't want sort of like people that they don't like moving next door to them. So Mame bought this very expensive property next to their property, and she intends on turning it into a home for unwed pregnant mothers, basically, of all different races and nationalities and different types, and basically just to kind of piss off this family. Now, on one hand, I love that it's kind of like mean and sassy, but I'm also like, you're using people to get back at someone. In a really
I know. Are you going to provide the resources, Mame? I assume that she
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I know.
But I do agree with you. This is where there is actual conflict in the movie, which is that Patrick is, because like his fiance's parents are like, dude, you're not marrying this guy. Like, let's go. We're leaving. And yeah. Patrick is like, you ruined my life. And I was like, oh, man, this movie's finally starting to get good. And then all of a sudden we just do another time jump. And now Patrick is actually married to the maid that we met in the previous scene for literally a second who he met. Mm-hmm. And they have a 4-year-old kid. So, yep, it was conflict for a second, but he just gets mad and leaves. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, well, now it's 4 years later and nothing matters. Mame were talking and he's married to the maid. And what the
and
fuck?
And everyone's happy. And Mame is going on a trip to like Russia.
Yeah,
or
she's
something,
going to Russia and she's taking the kid, which,
and
again, Mame loves to take children
like,
out of the country, out of state,
whatever.
I guess. I don't know.
And then they let. Yeah. And then they let the kid go, basically. And that's the movie.
Yep. That's the movie.
So basically what we needed, and this is so sad because I would have divorced my husband if he made me do this movie and only put me in 10 minutes of it. I would have divorced him.
Do you feel like if he had, because she again with like all the Angela Lansbury stuff and also her knowing that Lucille Ball was so terribly miscast, do you think that B. Arthur actually would have been more upset with him if she was in more of the movie? Because you know,
she would have saved it, hopefully. I mean, let's make the story more about Vera. I want to see what Vera's like. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I would have enjoyed the whole movie with Vera. I just like show me Vera. I would have been fine with that. Yeah. It's just, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. It's,
yes,
I don't know. I feel like
it's
yeah.
a hard watch, y'all. It's a hard watch.
But it's entertaining. But it's just, you're just going to be like, you're just going to be like, wait, did I accidentally get up and leave the movie, or did I like fall asleep and not mm-hmm. realize it? And you're going to like rewind because you feel like you missed something. You didn't miss anything. They just jump through time mm-hmm. way too much. Should we take a break maybe and do some golden takeaways?
Yes, let's do that. And we are back with our golden takeaway, which is a nugget of truth or inspiration that you can apply to your life or the lives of our listeners. Carrie, what's your golden takeaway from this film?
I think, you know how when you just keep making copies of things, they get worse? Like if you photocopy something and then you make a photocopy of the photocopy, like in the Michael Keaton, Andy McDowell movie Multiplicity that I talk about a lot on this podcast, mm-hmm. every copy of Doug was a kind of a weirder, worse Doug. I feel like that's what happened with this. Like you go from like book to movie to musical to movie, whatever like that was, it's like each time you're diluting it and changing it. And I bet like the original book was probably like the best version of this. And it's like, why do we just have to keep remaking things and making them worse? Hey, you're making it worse. I kind of plugged your other podcast a little bit. Like,
yeah,
like Jon Favreau, you didn't need to remake The Lion King. It was a perfect movie. That sort of thing. That's my golden takeaway.
Yeah. I agree. I would agree with that. I definitely would. My golden takeaway from this film is You guys know I'm a big proponent of watching older movies, classic movies, understanding where things come from, the early parts of people's careers, because it dictates sort of the direction they go in. And I find it fascinating to see parallels between the two. And I think that this is a wonderful, wonderful example of two parts of Bea Arthur's career. You know, there's sort of the Broadway part of Bea Arthur's career, and then there's her sort of midlife post switch that she did into television, and she became a very different type of persona. She became a very different type of actor when she went onto television. And this is a perfect example of sort of her putting to bed that Broadway part of her life and going into this new era where not only was she famous on her own, in her own right, for her own thing, not directed by her husband and not involved with her husband, who was famously very much a big part of her career in the 50s and 60s. But she went out on her own and did her own thing and made a name for herself. And I find this to be a really interesting thing to watch, knowing everything that she would do after this. You know, she was already in Maude during this, and she would obviously go on to the Golden Girls and become iconic in her own right. And I kind of love watching this for that reason, because it excites me for where she gets to go to after this.
Yeah, it is really fun to think that she gets to do Golden Girls, like, soon-ish. You know, that's so exciting.
I know. And within 11 years after doing this movie, she gets to go do Golden Girls. How cool is that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there were people who told her after this movie came out and flopped, like, you're never going to work again. And then, I don't know. Or
she put them to shame. Yeah. I mean, she was already killing it on Maude at this point. So literally her doing this was a favor.
That's true.
Was literally a favor.
Wow. Well, I love that. I didn't love this movie, but this has been another episode of Out on the Lanai, and we hope you all enjoyed it. And remember, if you want to join the GG VIP Club, you can do that at patreon.com/GoldenGirlsPodcast.
Yes. And guys, remember, we're part of Mom Moguls of Media, and you can find us on social media at Golden Girls Pod on Twitter, Out on the Lanai Official on the Instagrabbles, Golden Girls Pod on Facebook, and I'm H. Allen Scott /Sadie Pines on everything. I noticed that some people don't like it when I say face pageals and Instagrabbles and stuff, but you know what?
I love it.
And it makes me happy and it brings me joy. So I'm going to keep doing
Please
it,
do. Baby. I very much enjoy it. It brings me joy every single time. So, and I am Squidzy on Instagram and Squid Eat Squid on Twitter. And another thing that you guys can do if you want to help us out is you can rate and review us wherever you get this podcast.
And remember,
as always, stay golden.
We'll always be staying golden.
And that's how you exit a room.
Out on the Lanai is not endorsed by Whit Thomas Harris Productions, Touchstone Television, Disney, or any of its subsidiaries. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only.
All names, pictures, audio, and video clips of the Golden Girls are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of their respective trademark and/or copyright holders.